For anyone who lives in Allentown or has lived in Allentown, this is your kind of show. It's Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm John Pierce. Glad to greet you and have you as listeners this evening. My two guests are Mal Gross, Esquire. He is still practicing law in Allentown, and he has a story to tell. In fact, we're talking about a book of his called Two Mayors and a Lawyer. His grandfather and his father were the mayors, and he is the lawyer. And also Frank Whalen, who has been heard on these microphones in the past, and we'll get to that in just a minute. These two are well steeped in the history of Allentown. In fact, Mal's family in Allentown, the Gross family, goes back to the 1750s, coming from Germany via Philadelphia. Malcolm's grandfather was mayor of Allentown in the 1920s and 30s, and his father was mayor in the 1960s. And Frank, we might be asking Mal afterwards how come he dropped the baton and didn't become mayor himself, huh? That would be an interesting question. But Mal has helped with the start of the Wildlands Conservancy, Community Services for Children, Lehigh Valley Child Care, has been president of the Allentown Symphony and Lehigh County Historical Society, and he's one of the five Trexler Trust trustees. Mal, you put in your book, I think, that was one of the highlights of your career, was to be chosen.
Yes, it was. It certainly was. As a lawyer for the judges who make, the judges make the selection. The county, all the judges of the county bench vote on who will be one of those five trustees. So for a lawyer to be selected by them is a higher honor for anyone, but for somebody who practices before them, it's a very high honor.
That they really respect you. That's wonderful. And then in the book, what Malcolm has written, by the way, it's from the year 2013. It's called Two Mayors and a Lawyer, The Gross Family in Allentown History. It's a book of 215 pages, beautiful cover, featuring sepia, black and white, and color. And Mal puts himself in color. All right. We could bug him about that too, Frank. But the last part of the book has a whole series of editorials that Mal has written through the years for the Morning Call. And just to give a few titles to give you a sense of it, he wrote one on the Electoral College, one called Ignore Ghosts of Downtown Allentown, Thomas Jefferson and the Pursuit of Happiness, The Spirit of Key West, Florida. Reading the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, and many more. And now that I've introduced Mal, giving you a little taste of his background, let's go to Frank Whalen. Frank is going to be my co-host on this interview. He was born in Orange, New Jersey, and graduated from Livingston High School. Then he went to Illinois. What took you way out to Illinois, Frank?
Well, I met someone who was able to get me into a college in Illinois, told me about a college in Illinois that I could afford to go to because I'm the oldest of eight. And believe me, my dad didn't have a lot of money. He sold washing machines and dryers for Sears Roebuck. So I had to find a school that would take me with college with money that I could get from student loans. So like Blackburn did. Blackburn is a very unique place. I'm going to give a plug here. It actually has a work-study program where you work at the college and it takes off your tuition. So anybody wants to know more, let me know.
And that's in
Carlinville, Illinois.
Carlinville, Illinois. And then Frank went on to the University of Missouri there he obtained a master's in history. And there's your the first indication we have of your great interest in history. You do say Missouri. You don't say Missouri.
Well, when I lived in the Midwest, I was told that people from St. Louis say Missouri. People from the rest of the state say Missouri. So Blackburn was close enough to St. Louis that we all said Missouri.
You all pretended you were from St. Louis.
St. Louis, yes, exactly.
Does that predate the Great Arch out in St. Louis?
No, the arch goes back to, I think, the 60s sometime.
All right. Because that's now the symbol and the gateway to the West.
Yes.
That's beautiful. And then Frank worked for the Missouri State Archives for about 3 years before he came to the Lehigh Valley in 1981. And from that year until 2006, wrote more than 2,000 articles for the Morning Call on local history. And from 1997 to 2004, he was right here at WDIY. At least this was a part-time thing, of course.
That's right.
And it was he did essays on local history for us. So, Frank, it's a great pleasure to welcome you back. And let's get going with some questions for Mal and what this book is all about.
Okay. Well, Mal, now you have had a very interesting political background. Your family background is fascinating to think about. Here you had two mayors in the family. What inspired you to do this? Was it just interested in wanting to tell the people in the community about those people might not know about them?
Well, I hope it was a little bit more than that, Frank. Okay. I've had a longstanding interest in history like you. I'm not at your level of qualifications or competence, but I was a history major at Muhlenberg College, where I graduated from. My family has been involved in Allentown government and politics actually since, I think, 1856
wow.
or earlier.
Wow.
And I had scrapbooks, which I think I showed you on one occasion.
Yes,
you advised me on some preservation issues regarding my grandfather had kept a scrapbook for every year he was in office in big old ledger books like accountants used to use to keep the books at a trade company. And my dad, when he took office, showed me these scrapbooks. There were actually more than 16 of them. He was mayor for 16 years, but there were maybe 17 or 18 because some of them the years were so eventful. And said he was going to keep a scrapbook for every year he was mayor. My dad did. So I had all when my dad passed away, I had all these scrapbooks, which I glanced at occasionally, and thought, well, these are pretty dull stuff. They were mainly newspaper clippings, and when you looked at them open first blush, they were about a new sewer plant opening or something equally mundane. But in my law office, where we are at on Allentown on 7th Street, we have a full building and a full basement, and I have no idea what took me down to that basement one Saturday morning, probably looking for a legal file where I was working. And I looked at these books, and I probably was looking for an excuse not to work. So I started thumbing through them. And I realized that really what they were was almost a, sort of an unfolding mystery, because there would be a clipping in which there would be a clipping about something happening at city council in which my grandfather was saying certain things about an incident or an event. And then if you paged on, he would continue clipping as that event unfolded in the newspaper.
Oh.
And often, most of the time, I had no idea what the event was about or how it unfolded. But as you look through it, it was actually a lot of fun, at least to somebody who was interested in local history, because you'd see this event mentioned and then mentioned again, and then you see people taking positions on it. Sometimes it would just fade. You'd see nothing more. Sometimes it would be resolved. Sometimes it would come to something of a crisis. So that kind of piqued my curiosity, got me interested in these scrapbooks. And those scrapbooks are the basis of what is really a memoir. It's certainly not a history at the quality you would write. I say that meaning to be praiseful. It is what these scrapbooks tell you about in mainly newspaper stories, linked together by a lot of family stories, linked together by my own knowledge of local history. And that's how it started. And I did write some pieces on this for the Lehigh County Historical Society. And then I decided, well, maybe this would be worth a book. Because they were published in what you know as the Proceedings of the Society, that frankly was not very widely read. That's unfortunate. It was an excellent publication, but it just didn't get circulated very widely. So I thought, well, maybe this would spread the word about what Allentown was like at these times. Sorry for the long answer.
No, that's great. That's great. Gives us a lot. Of details. Now, you did meet your grandfather briefly, correct?
Very briefly. I have only one fleeting reference or recollection of him. I remember being in a house as a little boy, very little boy, and there was this very tall man seated in a black leather armchair. And he was actually almost intimidating. I don't have any recollection of him saying anything. But when I told my mother years later, she said, that had to be your grandfather. He had a leather chair, and he was a very tall man, and we would often go to visit there. So I have just that fleeting memory of him. That's the first thing I remember as a human being. And the second thing is that there is a, I think, very attractive bust of him, in, which mm-hmm. is the featured architectural sculptural piece in the Allentown Rose Garden, which is now named for him. Well, I and my cousin Buzz were his only two grandchildren, and we had to unveil them. And I remember being frightened for the second time because all I had to do was pull a drawstring. But I remember being there in short pants and being frightened to death that I, because I was very small again, that I couldn't do this. And I pulled a string, and that's all I remember. Apparently, the drawstring worked and it came off. So
good.
And I also remember a third thing, and it tells you the kind of presence he was. Mm-hmm. In our family, even though, in fact, I have virtually no memory of him. But the third thing was my parents taking me to William Swallow's home. William Swallow was a sculptor who did that piece, and I think he was actually a very fine sculptor and painter. I own a number of his paintings. Died young, unfortunately. Yeah. But we were taken to what must have been his garage because, again, I remember being taken in there, and there he was working on this, and my parents saying, that's a bust of your grandfather, and that made an impression on me, too. Mm. So he made impressions on me, even though I didn't know him beyond these memories.
When could you tell us a little bit about him, about his background?
Yeah, he was, as you heard me say, the family, the Gross family had been in Allentown literally since, I think, 1745 or 1750. Mm-hmm. Well, I have the ship's registry where one of the Grosses came over on I can't remember the name of the ship, but came over to Philadelphia and then came north into Lehigh County and lived then in Northampton Town, and they were there. I know for many, I have the family tree going back. One of them fought in the Revolutionary War. A second one fought in the War of 1812. I think both of them did so because they couldn't hide or buy their way out. I'm reasonably sure they fell on very hard financial times in the 1820s because I have some records of a sheriff's sale of the tavern that they owned on 7th Street. So, and then the family history goes blank until 1856 when Charles Gross was elected recorder of deeds with elective office in Lehigh mm-hmm. County, and he died in office. George Gross succeeded him and then went on to be he fought in the Civil War and was either a respected Democratic Party figure or a hack, depending on he had numerous positions, court criers and so forth, and he was postmaster of Allentown at a time when that was actually a very sought-after position. Because
is this post-Civil War or after?
This would have been post-Civil War. George Gross was very, very active in Democratic politics.
Okay.
He was, I have some papers that say he was state chairman of the unsuccessful Winfield Hancock campaign for president. Mm-hmm. He definitely was a supporter of Cleveland. And you got rewarded for that, and he named postmaster. And at that point, there was no civil service, so the postmaster controlled all the postal delivery positions. Mm-hmm. And Allentown had just gone to home delivery, daily home delivery, so they needed a fair number of postmen, and they were all loyal Democrats and George Gross supporters. So that's the most I know about him. And then Malcolm W. was the first family member to go to college. He went to Muhlenberg and graduated from Muhlenberg in the early 1890s, I think, and then went on and read law because in those days nobody went to law school, and then became a lawyer and then again worked his way up to the Democratic political system. He was active in the Wilson campaign, Woodrow Wilson campaign, and became city solicitor, and then was elected mayor, I think, in 1920.
Yeah, I think I remember reading that in 1913, when Judge Harvey died, he was one of the pallbearers.
Yes.
For the house, that the, which is now Sacred Heart Hospital.
Yeah.
It's now located in Allentown. It's Judge Harvey's house.
He was obviously connected there because he was hired as what I would say would be a factotum for a former mayor who wanted to tour the West. And so the two of them took a major train trip through the entire West. That's where he met my great-grandmother, who was
really?
Living in Los Angeles at that time. He married her, and they came east. He used that, actually, in his first campaign. His first campaign, it was interesting that the issues were quite a bit different then. He ran because he had been city solicitor for 8 years. So he ran, I know the city because I was city solicitor. The city was just coming into being then as a major municipality. And then he also ran that I toured the Western cities with a former mayor. I forget whose name it was offhand. But I learned progressivism because those cities were run under the progressives, and I can bring that in here. And the third thing was I'm a Muhlenberg College graduate. And, of course, there were, I think, quite a few graduates in those days because it was very much of a local school. So that was kind of his campaign scene.
It's interesting because sort of my understanding that Allentown was predominantly Republican in those days.
Well, it was becoming it? The county, the entire county was Democratic going back to Jackson. And it was the city was starting to become Republican. There were still it was still a swing area.
Okay.
By the late 20s, it was very Republican. But at that time, it was very much of a swing area. And he was elected. He defeated a Republican. But there must have been some kind of a I don't want to say a deal, but it's curious. There are a number of references in these articles that talk about five former mayors, and they made these appearances. And they were implicitly supporting him, and I think he was running as kind of the anointed successor to Al Reichenbach.
Okay.
This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. You are listening to Mal Gross and Frank Whalen. Chat about Allentown's history, a fascinating topic. Time for us to take a break. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9.
This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm John Pierce, along with Elizabeth Parcells, working our board for us, as usual. And we are talking about the history of Allentown. Now, speaking of history, before we get on with another topic, Frank, I want you and Mal to tell me something that you said off air about the house where you live, where Frank lives.
Well, the house that I live in, which is 1208 Walnut Street, was the home that was owned by Mal's grandmother.
Great-grandmother.
Great-grandmother. And it's an interesting place to me because it's got a backyard to it, and downtown at the end of a row, there's a backyard, and it's a strange mystery. We have all the deeds to the house that the previous owner collected, and the first one was a John Blank, which is an old Allentown name, and how do I get it to be Blank? I don't know. But anyway, he's stipulated in 1872, there will not be anything put on that side of the house. There will never be. Now, I don't know, maybe they were afraid that, you know, somebody wanted to herd cattle through there or something, but That's so that's sort of interesting. So what was it like? Do you remember that house with your grandma?
A beautiful home. That was we called her Nanny. She passed away before I was born, but she was the widow of George Groves, the man I was telling you about, who had been postmaster. I think she moved in there as a widow. I don't know that they lived there together. Mm-hmm. As I say, he was a Civil War vet. She was significantly younger than him. And I know that there was they waged a lengthy and ultimately successful war to get his pension, because pensions were granted, as I recall it, individually. There wasn't a right to them, and they were in a rather modest amount, in less than $100 a month, but it meant a lot. And I have the paperwork where the pension was originally denied, and they had to continue their efforts, and ultimately she received that pension after George died. So, but it's a very charming home, and I only had the pleasure of being in it after she passed away, when you were kind enough to invite me there on a couple of occasions. So I don't know why John Blank didn't want any neighbors, but it adds to the ambience, because you got breathing space there that you wouldn't have in a typical city home.
Mal, I think that Frank is on the verge of inviting you and family and me and family over for a big sumptuous dinner at some point. Frank,
cocktails. I don't know.
and we were talking also off air about the importance of Mal's grandfather and father and the times that they were mayors.
It is fascinating to me, and as we were saying over the break, that Mal, that both your grandfather and your father were mayors of Allentown at very pivotal points in the city's history.
I think that's definitely true, and I think I'm proud of them for a lot of reasons, but I think they did furnish critical leadership during that time. If you try to look at the history of the 20s, which was my grandfather's high tide years, he was the featured figure there as a political official. Harry Trexler, who was his secret ally — one was a Republican, my grandfather was a Democrat, but they were definitely allied — was certainly the patriarch of the city. But my grandfather was shrewd enough or wise enough to ally himself with Trexler, to realize how much good Trexler can do for the city. And my dad was mayor here in the 60s, which was kind of if I were to say, a golden age was Allentown in the 20s, a silver age when the city had its second renaissance. My dad led the effort to redevelop the city. And, of course, they built a new city hall, which had been my grandfather's dream that he wasn't able to fulfill. Mm-hmm. And they built the whole area east of City Hall was rebuilt into apartment houses, a hotel, and townhouses, which were very successful. So I think that they were mayor during that time, and I think they get a good deal of the credit for being the leaders during that time. Incidentally, Allentown's politics really functioned almost exclusively on leadership rather than legal power.
Okay.
At that point, the government was what was called mayor council, which was actually nicknamed weak mayor, because the mayor was just one of five council people, had one vote, and was by legal designation the head of the police department, which sounds important, but in fact, it was rightly all civil service, so there was no real ability to hire a lot of people or exert a lot of patronage or other power. So you had to, in both cases, you had to learn how to build consensus. And when you read those articles, you find that both of them were really masters at building bipartisan consensus, both in City Hall, and then they were also masters of what I used to be called the bully pulpit. Mm-hmm. They got out in front of issues, launched campaigns for them, and then got city council behind them because the train was already running.
Doesn't consensus sound like a sweet word nowadays?
Yes. Now, don't get me wrong. When you read those articles again, there were some harsh exchanges.
Yeah.
Harsh exchanges. And I'm sure there were harsher exchanges behind the closed doors when they met because those were pre-Sunshine Law days. But, yes, there were some very, very interesting and sharp exchanges.
I know that General Trexler was not exactly known as a placid man. General Trust.
That's right. General Trexler ruled with an iron hand. You wanted to be on the same side as he was. And most people did, but some people were foolish enough to get on the other side of him. And they paid the price.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is a great picture of General Trexler and your dad and your grandfather at the building of the Americas.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit of that?
Well, you know, what happened in 1927 was, again, a really magic year for the city because the Americas Hotel, which today is not in use, but if you take one look at it, it's a magnificent structure. And that was built at 6th and Hamilton Streets, and it made a statement on the east end of Hamilton Street. PPL went up a short time before that on the west side at 9th and Hamilton, and 5C, a Mack truck, opened up over on the south side of Allentown. Mm-hmm. So you had a major industry coming here, the truck industry, which was ultimately to employ 20,000 people just at that one plant. And then you had PPL, which was very important because not only was it critical in that the general forced it to be here rather than Hazleton, and it dominated the whole eastern part of the state with a building that was certainly one of the tallest in the state outside of Philadelphia. And then you had this magnificent hotel that, you know, if you probably were inside of it,
oh,
Frank.
Yes.
It was an architectural and artistic marvel. The buildings, the murals, the stonework and masonry was just spectacular. So Allentown then had a hotel that was really second to none around the area, and that became a gathering place and so forth. Really made a statement that Allentown was something. It was a city.
Now, it's interesting to me. I did not know that there was rivalry between Hazleton and Allentown for PP&L.
Yes, yes. There was quite a – and Frank would – probably know a lot about that. I mean, I think if it hadn't been for the general, who was, I believe, chairman of the board, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was definitely on the board.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he was chairman, but I'm sure he was. You see, I'm sure he thought he was chairman. Yes,
right.
And everybody else thought he was
too. Right.
Yeah, it's interesting that and that's true. That was really the beginning of Allentown's golden age when your grandfather was there and all these buildings were going up.
Right.
And then in 1928, they had a 100,000 population parade, which is an interesting story in and of itself because once the census department predicted that Allentown was going to have 100,000 population in 1930 census, or it was projected that they were. And they said, okay, that's great. It's the 1920s. We're going to have a party. Ballyhoo, hip hop, hooray. You know, they had this huge, wonderful parade. The pictures of it are fantastic. Everybody did these wonderful floats, and it was great. And then the census results came out. 96,000. But by then the depression was going on and people didn't want to talk about it. So
that's another story. Yeah. I heard a lot of these stories over the dinner table and they were wonderful stories, but it did all of those things coming together at one time made Allentown the place to be, not just in the county, but really in the whole region. And then of course Hess Brothers was just getting rolling, and that became in the 50s and 60s when my dad was mayor, I think, the premier department store outside of Philadelphia for basically the whole eastern part of the United States. So all of that happened during their administration. They didn't bring about those things, but they knew how to take advantage of them and promote them and make Allentown important.
Was your dad's involvement in politics and wanting to be mayor coming out of his own father's
record? No, he was not. He told me the story that he was working at PPL. He worked there for 26 years.
Oh, okay.
And he went to his father, Malcolm W., sometime, and I'm not sure when the date of this was, but I'm going to guess 1940, and said he was being asked to run for school board. and that he was going to do this, wanting to get into politics. And he said, my grandfather, Malcolm W., forbade it in no uncertain terms. He did not want him involved in politics. Politics had been, you know, his life, really.
Sure.
And he had not really given up his legal career to be mayor and had very little financially to show for it. And it had been it was a very hard time. Consensus looks easy from the outside, but it tears your guts out from the inside as you're trying to make concessions, trying to be civil to people.
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah,
it must
exactly.
Been, that's
right.
You know, when does concession become
surrender
or right. appeasement? And
right.
that's the line.
And he had a surrender on him. I mean, my grandfather really wanted that city hall that my dad built and had plans for it, and it was shot down by other people on council that it was a waste of money and they didn't want to do it. And I'm sure that hurt him, and that's why my dad determined he was going to follow through on that.
Now, we know today that everybody in Allentown, and we have items, but all the wonderful parks in Allentown.
Yes.
But when your grandfather and General Trexler were conceiving it, it was not considered the hottest idea on the block, as I recall.
It was called Gross's Folly, he was bitterly criticized for putting in the park system, and the general was willing to back it up, but somebody had to be out front supporting it, and he made a major campaign promoting the parks and got a lot of newspaper publicity about how wonderful they were and would be. And then his final effort was the Rose Garden. That was after the general was gone, and he was bitterly criticized for that. He was very shrewd in the sense that he had various themes he would play that worked, and I now found he stole them from other people around the country. But one of his themes was it'll create jobs, and there were 16 jobs created as a result of building the Rose Garden, and he beat that drum. And the other was when he wanted to spend money, he would always talk about not spending money but efficiency. He would always say this is going to make the city more efficient,
right?
So that he was able to get authority to spend the money on the theory it would save it long range.
Fascinating. So he understood the nature of the local politics worked.
Very much. He knew what buttons not to push and what buttons to push, and he was very effective in doing that. And my dad was, I think, too. Those were his themes. Excuse me.
And so when your dad came along then you said his father did not want him to get into politics.
That's correct.
And yet he got into politics.
Yes. In his early 50s, he had left PPL. He had been Deputy Secretary of Commerce under Governor Leader. So that was kind of getting his feet wet in politics. And he was approached by a lot of my grandfather's former allies who still kind of worshipped the ground Mal had. And they urged him to run for mayor. And he finally decided we'd come back to Allentown from Harrisburg, and he would run. And
okay,
but for him, that was kind of his birth. He had lived in politics all his early years, but he'd never been in elective office or even an effort for it. So it was new what he was doing when he was running for mayor.
How did your mom feel? His wife feel about all this?
She hated it. My dad always said my mother was his biggest asset, and he was sure she voted against him both times.
She wanted him home nights.
She did. And in those days, it did require you to be out almost every night on the banquet circuit. Again, the mayor's power was really illusory. But if he was there working these crowds and getting them lined up behind the issues that he wanted, he had tremendous power because everybody wanted the mayor to be the toastmaster at their banquet, to be a speaker at their lodge, and so forth. And both of them did that just nonstop. I know my grandfather was in failing health the last 2 years because he put sort of trial balloon in the newspaper that said his health wasn't good and he couldn't be out nights anymore, so he would be declining speaking engagements. My dad kept it up until, unfortunately, the day he died.
Wow. And you have written about how you found out about your dad's
death. Yeah. Well, my dad died while I was in law school. My uncle Fritz, who was a family doctor, called me. I knew those are the days when the phone rang, Frank. You know, at 6 in the morning, you knew something was likely
serious,
wrong.
Yes.
And I had just seen, I don't know what made me do this, because I was not somebody to go down to my dad's office. I don't think I was down there more than once or twice when he was in City Hall. The new City Hall had just been completed. He was in the fifth floor office, which is still the mayor's office, beautiful views of the city.
Sure.
He was in there about a week. I don't know why I stopped on my way to law school. It was just an impulse. And he showed me the new City Hall and showed me the views from his office. He was terribly proud of that.
Of course.
And then my uncle called the next morning and said he had, after going out on a speaking engagement that night, he had come home and had a heart attack in the middle of the night, did not survive.
Wow.
So
you got the phone call, as I remember you saying.
I did.
It
was my uncle, and then he put my mother on and then went home for the funeral.
And Mal, where were you in law school?
I just started it was the first couple of days of my second year, so it really knocked the blocks out from under me.
Okay. So that's the year that they work you to death. Is that the way
it
is?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. That's a good question. It could have been the start of my third year. I think it was, as I reflect on that. I think it was the very beginning. I think school had literally begun that day, and it was a terrible blow to me because I was so I was close to my dad, and I really idolized him and my grandfather, and he was really – there's a long story to this. I'll try to make it very short, but the family – until I lost – somebody mentioned me in politics. I tried twice to be elected district attorney, and I lost twice. That was enough.
Okay.
But the family before I lost those two elections – had only lost one election in the whole history of the family, including George Gross when he was elected to the assembly a couple of times, Charles Gross, right? My grandfather, four terms. Before that was Register of Wills. My dad, two terms. The only election they ever lost was Malcolm W. Gross as delegate to the Democratic Convention of 1924. Oh. And there's a story there.
And we're going to have to take a break before we hear this story. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Allentown. I'm John Pierce, along with Elizabeth Parcells, and we will be back in 60 seconds.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And Mal Gross, you had a story that you were about to tell us.
Well, as I said, my grandfather, the only election that was ever lost in the family before my defeats for district attorney back in the 70s, my grandfather wanted to run for Congress. That was the secret plan. Mm-hmm. In those days, Lehigh County was tied to Berks County, which is a heavily Democratic county, or was then. Mm-hmm. And he had announced he was putting the word out that he was going to run for Congress. But he wanted to do a trial run, and the idea was he would run for delegate to the Democratic Convention in 1924 and run for Congress 2 years later. And he thought he had a deal with Berks County, that Lehigh County would get one delegate and Berks County would get one delegate. He campaigned. When the votes were counted by less than 100 votes, he got beat by both the Berks County delegates, so he lost the election. That doesn't sound like much, but apparently it stuck in his craw because my dad was still talking about it in the 50s. And my dad wanted, as I said, to fulfill a lot of my grandfather's dreams. Mm-hmm. He got himself named delegate to the Democratic Convention in 1964 in Atlantic City. I went down there, and he was mm-hmm. a delegate down there. He got 1/5 of a vote. That's how thin they sliced wow. the pie. And he came home from that in 1964, and a week later he died.
Wow.
So, you know, it was kind of the last dream that he had to fulfill, and he had
Did
done
it.
That.
Okay.
So that's the story.
Mal Gross, Esquire, has written a book, Two Mayors and a Lawyer, The Gross Family in Allentown History. And on the cover, we find his grandfather's likeness in sepia, no smile, his father with, yes, open lips, sort of a smile. He's in black and white. And Mal himself giving a full smile in living color.
You know, that's a good point, John. I have a number of photographs of Mal. None of them are is he smiling. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that is because he thought it would be undignified to be photographed or because he had very bad teeth.
Could
but he
be.
Did.
Could be.
He did.
So it's a very handsome cover. And on the back, we find, get ready for this one, two big boys, Mayor Malcolm Gross and Babe Ruth, September 1923 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Ruth is in his New York Yankees uniform with the stockings very much in evidence. Some of the players nowadays will wear with the socks barely showing, and others way up high, and his are way up high, no hat on. And next to him is Mal Gross's grandfather, Malcolm W. Gross. As you said, very tall and quite thin.
Yes.
And, of course, Babe Ruth shows off the thinness of your grandfather, too. And now, why was Babe Ruth in Allentown?
Well, my grandfather had been negotiating for several years to get Ruth to come to Allentown. Those were times when the major league teams would barnstorm to make money, to keep the team together in off season, or even before the World Series, believe it or not. The Yankees had won the American League pennant. There was a 2-week hiatus till the series. And to pay the team during those 2 weeks, they would make exhibition appearances. And that's how they kept the team together for those 2 weeks. But Malcolm had been negotiating for several years. He was on the verge of getting Ruth here a couple years before, and then Ruth canceled at the last minute. In fact, to the point that Mal Gross actually he and a group of Allentonians rushed over to New York by train to try to get Ruth to reverse his decision. He wouldn't do it, but apparently they did prevail on him to come here with the Yankees that year. And they played a team called the Allentown Dukes. Duke Landgraf was the manager. And it's a long, controversial history. But the Allentown Dukes, the year before, I think it was, it may have been 2 years before, had actually caused a tremendous controversy in Allentown because they were playing baseball on Sundays. We had the blue laws at that time, and the county ministerium had a major meeting at the Y. The auxiliary had a major meeting. They voted unanimously to demand that these games be shut down. They went to City Hall, and my grandfather agreed with them. Now, it was a political decision. The county was heavily Protestant, and he said he would shut them down. So they did try to charge them with violation of the blue laws. The first round, they drew an Irish magistrate because the Catholics didn't have any problem with this at all. They loved the games. And he said he had no jurisdiction. The case was thrown out. Then they brought a second charge. They arrested the managers is what they did. And Landgraf was one of the managers. And the case was delayed slightly, various lawyers jockeying. And then one of the lawyers, who must have been brilliant, figured something out. The fine for violating the blue laws was $5. So the managers promptly said, there's no need for a hearing. We'll pay our fine, and made very clear they were going to pay every fine for of $5. And that was a small
every
license
Sunday.
Fee. But the following year, the team went to Puerto Rico and they were very successful there, and they made a lot of publicity, and they became like ambassadors to Allentown. The local papers picked this up, and overnight they became not villains but heroes. And so they were then the next year played, and then Ruth came here with the Yankees. Ruth played the whole game, and he had one hit. The Allentown team beat the Yankees 9-8 in the last inning. And
wonderful.
Both teams, they played. This was not the usual one inning and out you go and now a bunch of nobodies. The whole team played, and the whole town turned out. Mm. My dad skipped high school. My grandfather caught him there. Of course, he got in a lot of trouble. Oh, but the whole town turned out, and you heard stories about people who had been at that game until Connie Raker, who you certainly remember,
was the
president of the Good Shepherd Home and a very prominent person. He told me many times that he came out of the home as a young boy to see Ruth go by in an open car. You know, they sort of paraded over to and back. But Ballfield was in Susquehanna Street.
Mm.
So it was quite an event. And I regard that picture, John, as one of the most iconic baseball 1920s pictures as you'll ever see. I mean, the two figures look so F. Scott Fitzgerald. It isn't
yes.
funny.
That's a good way to describe it. Yes. And your grandfather with the bow tie.
Yes. The whole thing is just so 1920s.
Exactly. Well, Mal, in one of the articles that you wrote for the Morning Call, going back to February 1997, and you titled it Ignore Ghosts of Downtown. Did you get to put the titles, or did somebody at the paper put
them? No, that's their headline.
Oh, that's their headline.
That article was pretty controversial at the time.
All right. Well, let me read what just a couple of sentences that I have outlined here. Mal says, and I'm going to ask you if you stand by these words, right? There is no longer a downtown in Allentown. There is only a street called Hamilton. Major retail merchandising lives on MacArthur Road and on Cedar Crest Boulevard. Allentown's downtown is lacking in significant charm or historic significance. So negative.
Well, certainly that's not true today. I think it was very much true at that time. What I was trying to get Allentown people to think about was we've got to get away from Hamilton Street as a commercial shopping district with Hess Brothers as the principal store. We've got to think in another way. And I actually got a lot of praise for that from people who were working downtown, those of us who were the survivors, who said, thank you for telling it like it is. We're just chasing a pipe dream here that we're going to somehow revive shopping in downtown Allentown with major department stores. They're gone.
What's the year that Hess's closed?
A couple of years before that. Maybe Frank would remember.
Yeah, I think it was, what was it?
Mid-90s?
96.
It was the Bonton, if you remember.
Yes, okay.
That was kind of
afterwards.
Sold to the Bonton.
Bonton, yeah.
And then
right.
it completely closed.
That's right.
And there was also Lay's department store.
And Zollinger and Harnad's. There were three really high-quality department stores there into almost the 90s. And it was really a pleasure and an excitement to go to Hess's and Lay's and Zollinger's. I mean, it was just, they were wonderful stores. But they were gone, and they're not coming back. So I stand by that. But I'm thrilled with what's going on in Allentown now.
Me
yes.
too.
Yes. What a renaissance now, huh?
Yes.
The let's see. You go back to talking about the 1920s with your grandfather. Daylight saving time post-World War I was controversial.
It was tremendously controversial.
Who had a problem with that?
Well, first of all, it hadn't existed until World War I. The Germans invented it, and the British followed suit, which was, they thought they would save electricity by extending the summer days. And then when the war started here, it was adopted here. But as soon as the war, the farmers hated it. And you remember, we were still the center of a farming community in Allentown. It was very controversial. Mm-hmm. The farmers detested it because it messed up their whole work schedule. They got up early and it was dark.
Just 1 hour, huh?
Yeah, but one hour to somebody who's working hard on a farm and you got to get out there and do your chores was no joke. And the controversy went on into the 20s because different communities were trying to adopt it or not adopt it. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, Mal Gross killed it by blaming the railroads. He said, no railroads, the railroads aren't going to come here unless they have a consistent schedule. And, you know, daylight saving time is what they want. So it's not my fault, it's the railroads. We've got to have it. But there were attempts into the late 20s. One councilman insisted on passing a resolution that we wouldn't have daylight saving time. And then the police and firemen and so forth began saying, well, not on our watch. We like daylight saving time. We're not coming to work. And there was an explosion before council with him denouncing other council people who were ignoring the fact that he passed this resolution. But it was even into, not Frank's day, but my youth, you heard a lot of controversy about it around here. Believe it or not, it was a major.
God's time.
Yeah.
You're fooling with God's time.
Yeah. Speaking of the railroads, I remember back in the 1950s that the railroads were very slow to put their schedules on local time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we would go to meet a train in Chicago, mm-hmm. and it would be, by our watches, it would be 4 p.m., but we would have to remember that the train said it would be there at 4 p.m. That meant we had to be there at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. to meet the train.
Yeah, it was a problem.
And I think the airlines changed that because we're flying such long distances. You cannot have just a single point of time. You have to go with local time.
I never thought of that, but it sounds sounds logical.
In the 1920s, also with your grandfather being mayor of Allentown, the first traffic light was installed on Hamilton Street.
Yes.
Where exactly, do you know?
I think it was at that I'm not sure. I think it was 6th and Hamilton.
6th and Hamilton, yeah, okay.
But, you know, the backstory on that, of course, is if you read the headlines in the years before then, today we read headlines about the number of people killed in Allentown. Mm-hmm. There were headlines then about the number of people killed in Allentown, and it was significant. I mean, I'm talking about 20, 30 people killed.
In traffic accidents.
Half of them were children. Because of children not understanding the dangers of running out in the street, parked cars, and then the rest. Yes, they were killed by automobiles. The motor car was as dangerous as the pistol is in Allentown today. The city was trying to respond by adding police. They were adding. They bought motorcycles. And nothing was really helping, and then technology solved the problem with the traffic light.
Mm.
We've mentioned PP&L several times. There was a time in the 60s when they were thinking of moving to the suburbs and wound up making their decision to stay right downtown.
Yeah, it was when my dad was mayor, and they weren't thinking. They announced they were moving, and they had bought – they'd either had an option on land or they were moving. My dad was trying to deal with the situation. He also was trying very much to keep Mack Truck in Allentown. Mack Truck announced they were moving to Hagerstown. So he had to deal with that. That was a whole year of controversy. He brought the governor in and managed to persuade the union to make concessions, and they stayed. And then with PPL, my dad was making alternate plans. He wasn't announcing them, but that was when the Tower of Learning was built by the University of Pittsburgh. And his dream was, he knew there was a new community college the coming. The legislature approved it. And he
for
was,
Lehigh County.
For Lehigh County. And he was going to put the new community college in the PPL building to replace PPL. He was always at least trying to stay ahead of the problem. Luckily, the problem solved itself. They decided not to move.
Yeah. And later on, some of the classroom spaces and office spaces from LTRI-C were located in downtown Allentown.
Oh, that's where it is downtown today. Right. We're glad to have them there.
We have the other campus, but downtown is part of it.
It's a big plus.
Well, guess what? We have run out of time for this edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. Mal Gross, and the book is called Two Mayors and a Lawyer, the Gross Family and Allentown History.
Just to continue that plug, it was published by the Lehigh County Historical Society, and it's available at their bookstore for $22.
So, all right.
I read it, and it's great. So read it.
Thank you. All the proceeds go to the Historical Society, every dollar of those $22.
Excellent.
So if anybody's interested, you can get one down there.
And Frank Whalen, thank you so much for joining me as host today.
You're welcome, John.
Thanks a lot, Frank.
Thank you, Mal.
And remember, until we meet again, to be gentle with your neighbor.